This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Darius Thomas.
All right, so we're going to have fun. Let your shoulders back.
And Karina Anglada.
You get to listen to music all day.
Jalen Jones is a motion designer with the Vegas Golden Knights. He joined them in year two and plays an integral role in building the atmosphere and vibes of the in-game show from 3D graphics to ice projection. Once he got a taste of fan reactions to his work, he was hooked. As a black creative who is part of the LGBTQ+ community, Jalen explains how he goes about putting himself into the work that is important to him. All right, Darius. Time dot is.
Oh, yeah. That. It's a morning. Thought I still had it up, but 47. Sounded pretty good. Maybe it looked good, but didn't sound good. Who knows?
It didn't look good on my end, but we'll be surprised. Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go!
Welcome to Baller Effects, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini-course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step-by-step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport-specific motion training, visit BallerFX on YouTube and get started today. Excited today to have Jalen Jones joining us here as a senior motion designer with the Vegas Golden Knights. Jalen, thanks for taking the time to hang out with us and have a convo during Pride Month here.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. Definitely an honor to be on this podcast. I listened to a couple episodes and I'm a part of like the Slack channel and all that too. So it's good to be here and be a part of this.
Awesome. Good to hear it. I love your about me page on your website. You say, I unfortunately don't have a paragraph filled with buzzwords to sell you on, so check out my work. You're a show me person, not a tell me person. So I feel like that just kind of explains a little bit about your personality and who you want to be in this space. Can you start by giving us a little bit of a background on how you got into sports, how you got into getting into motion design?
Yeah, for sure. So I feel like I have a similar story to everybody else where I just kind of fell into sports on accident. Initially, I went to school for more like web design and UI UX design. I thought I was going to, you know, work for Google and work in Silicon Valley. And, you know, I was going to get an early jumpstart on my career. When I applied for so many jobs outside of college. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case. But I want to say in October of 2018, there's a job posting on a job board for a motion design intern with the Golden Knights. And I was like, I don't really have any experience doing any kind of motion design work, but I'm just going to apply anyway, see what happens. And thankfully, after a couple of rounds of interviews, I ended up getting the job. So for me, learning motion design was a lot of like trial by fire. When I joined, it was the second season of the Golden Knights. In the previous season, they were just the Stanley Cup runner-ups. So getting thrown into the fold of like, you know, this team that has this world-class entertainment and production and learning how to do motion graphics on the fly for them. Definitely trial by fire, but I think ended up working out for the best for sure.
So that's awesome that you got in as an intern in the second season. And now you've turned that into a full-time job and been promoted to senior motion designer as well. And you seem to focus a lot on 3D. So I'm curious where you started to develop those skills, because you also have a little bit of graphic design. Where did that interest and that background start?
Right. So it all started for me in high school. We had a magnet portion of the high school that had IT related stuff and also just general computer kind of tech in general. And there was a 3D class that I was interested in way back when. I took it as a freshman, I believe. And even just like going back to those memories and what I used to produce back then, it was just like, it was really bad. But I was like, oh, this is really cool that I can, you know, put together a 3D environment, animate it, and see it come to life. So that's where my initial interest started. I believe I went to 3D3 technically, which was up until my junior year of high school. And then from there, I took a couple of Blender related classes when I was in college. So I think I already, like going into the Golden Knights position, I already had like a general knowledge of just like how 3D programs work, not necessarily in terms of producing motion graphics, but just like my knowing my ways around the program, I think kind of helped when it comes to translating certain things and just being able to maneuver around programs. And I think it helped made the learning process easier for me.
Growing up, like how much did you, were you into art or did it, is it something that came later in life? Because sometimes we just know like early on, like I know for me, I used to draw a lot when I was much younger. And then I kind of like stumbled into video. Is that something that you started like very early on? Or is that something that just kind of clicked one day?
For sure. I love telling this story. So I have an older brother, and since he's my older brother, when I was younger, I thought he's like the coolest person in the world. And because of that, I wanted to do everything that he was doing, you know? So when he was in high school, he took a photography class, like an intro to photography class, and he was learning how to do Photoshop and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, well, my brother's doing it, so I want to try it too. So I learned how to like start editing photos through Photoshop. And then from there, that turned into making like my own cover art for songs back in the day. Because I was like a very organized person on my iPod. Like I needed every song to have the proper artist, song title, and a cover art to go along with it. And for songs that didn't have it, I would make my own. So that was kind of like my initial like step into graphic design as a whole. I want to say this is around like middle school for me. And that's kind of when I realized I was like, oh, there's like a pathway for me to do this. The kind of breakout when I realized I could do it for a career was when one of my favorite artists, my favorite artist back then, he was a rapper by the name of Logic. And he had a Ustream that was going on. He was previewing a new single of a song called My Chain. I was like, I really like this song. And I like how it's coming out. I'm just going to make a little mock-up cover for it in Photoshop. And then sent it to him on Twitter. He retweeted that tweet, you know, got a lot of traction. And then when the song officially came out, he used that cover art that I just made as a fan for like the official cover artwork for that song. And I was like, oh, like, wow, that's like a real thing that has happened. Cause you know, you always see CDs growing up and you're like, well, I wonder how that, you know, process even starts of creating art for an artist. And here I was like 13, 14 years old. And I have like a song cover for an artist that I really like. I was like, oh, okay, then this could be something for me. So I think that was kind of like when it really clicked that I can, if I focus on, you know, design as a whole, then I can make something out of it.
Did he send you some royalties or any payments?
No, I just got a little bit of clout, but that was pretty much it.
At 13, that was probably just not for
it. Yeah.
Well, you're talking about some ancient things here. You're talking about CDs, you're talking about iPods, you're talking about Ustreams, like things, you know, a lot of things that have gone forgotten in today's world. Like, obviously, you've been able to see everything from a creative perspective evolve from your youth to now. What's been your favorite thing to kind of that has kind of changed?
Everything that has changed, I think, just being able to see. I think like accessibility, for better or for worse. But I do think there's general accessibility to so many of these like programs or products that people can use, and just being able to see, you know, the creative mind that people have, and you know, seeing these things and how inspiring it could be to me personally. I'm always like a person who will advocate for an equal playing field, you know, for people, because I feel like there are a lot of like brilliant people out there, whether it be other artists, musicians or whatever, but they don't have the resources to actually, you know, have these things come to fruition. So by, you know, seeing all these things come out and having more people have access to these kind of things and materials, I think that's like a net positive in general. Not talking about like AI or anything like that, but just general accessibility to programs where people can, you know, create for themselves and have those tools. I think the development of that has been, you know, extraordinary. And we've seen just an explosion of creativity because of that, I feel.
And you had mentioned that you were using Blender or learned on Blender. Do you still use Blender today, since it's a free tool? It goes with what you were just talking about with accessibility there.
No, I don't use a lot of Blender these days. I do use it occasionally for like converting 3D models that may come in like a weird format, because I know Blender has like an extensive tool of like plugins for importing 3D stuff. So we usually just grab it in that format, put it through Blender, export it in a more friendly format for like Cinema 4D.
When it comes to how you create and how you get an idea and work on the execution of it, mm-hmm. What does that process look like for you?
So I'm a big throw everything at a wall and see what sticks kind of person. Almost kind of like, you know, you're creating a statue out of marble. Like you're just kind of chipping away at everything and then like seeing like, oh, like, okay, this can take this form or this can take this form. I am like the worst at like actually ideating, like storyboarding or anything like that. For me, it's just like kind of boring. I just like to jump right into the program and like see results immediately. That might be like TikTok brain, I don't know, but I just like to kind of get things going as soon as possible, because then I think from there I can like have an idea out that I can visually see and then refine from there if need be. I think that's kind of like the best way that I work at things. And then I'll have like 4 or 5 different version offshoots from like my main idea until I get like something that I'm really happy with. But I just have to see things like on the screen in front of me for it to like really resonate with me. Because if I try to like storyboard, I'm just like, because I can't draw. Like the reason why I love doing graphic design and things on the computer is because I was terrible as like a kid doing art or actually drawing or doing anything with my hand. So I'm like, okay, when it comes to the computer, this is like my sketchbook and my final draft at the same time. So that's how like my creative process is, just kind of throwing up everything and then be like, okay, like what can I take from this that like looks good and makes sense and isn't too much.
So you're very iterative. Like you start with the base elements and then you just keep adding details and whatnot to until you're happy with it. Is that
right?
Sound about right?
Yeah. Or like the opposite. I'll just like grab a whole bunch of like assets and like textures and whatnot and just kind of not throw everything on the page, but I'll like cycle through different things and be like, okay, like this is the aesthetic that I want. These are the assets I'm going to use to accomplish this aesthetic. All right, now how do I get from point A to point B? You know, I kind of like have everything that I need. And it's just like, okay, now what do I really, really need out of everything that I grabbed?
And when it comes to composition and how you build the look and the feel, how do you approach that?
It depends on the like aesthetic for the season, for sure. Because right now we're in the golden age with the Golden Knights. So we're really leaning heavily on like kind of like the glitz, the glamour, the shininess, the pop, the gold, you know, the over the topness of that. But then there are definitely like certain situations too, such as like we have like the Winter Classic jerseys this season, I believe. So I went with like an old Western theme, which is, you know, completely different than what we've been doing for the regular season. But it was also an opportunity to try something new and, you know, execute it in a way that's like completely different than what we traditionally would do, you know, with the Golden Age theme. So yeah, it definitely just like, just depending on, you know, what the overall season aesthetic is, that has a lot to do with it. And then just whatever you want to do internally too. We're pretty fortunate in the way that our team lets us operate from a creative standpoint. Like we have a lot of creative freedom within our organization. So we can kind of like do, I want to say whatever we want, like obviously within the brand of like the whole medieval Vegas theme, but that can go so many different ways. So, you know, we're pretty thankful that we have that creative flexibility.
So we briefly talked about Blender and it sounds like you're using mostly Cinema 4D now. Do you use any other programs outside of that, any Houdini or anything like that?
Outside of like After Effects for compositing,
yeah,
not really. Illustrator for like logo design, of course, Photoshop for whatever photo touch-ups that we need. We have been looking a little bit into Unreal Engine internally.
Yep.
But there's not really like a super clean motion graphics pipeline yet. But the fact that Unreal Engine does like all this stuff in real time and has all these different like plugins and elements, it makes it like such an interesting prospect for producing 3D stuff. I'm sure somebody smarter than me is going to figure out a good motion graphics pipeline using Unreal Engine. At least I hope so. But yeah, that's something that we've been looking into a bit recently. There's an esport that I follow called RLCS, which is for Rocket League. They were kind of like a real first foray into motion graphics using Unreal Engine because they have this thing called the Hype Chamber. And you know, we were able to like reverse engineer that a little bit. But yeah, other than that, that's kind of like our main stuff that we're using internally so far.
Awesome. And then when it comes to ice projection, I don't think that's a conversation we've really had on this podcast. Mm. What all is involved in that? And from you creating the content to getting it to the execution and display phase?
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a big undertaking. So we have like a giant comp that we work off of. It's like, I believe, 4,000 by 1,700. For ice projection specifically. And we've done, so since year one, you know, we've done ice projection. And recently, I want to say about maybe like two or three seasons ago, we worked with the Famous Group, and they outsourced to another company. I can't remember the name of the company. It starts with a Q, I believe. I wish I could remember that. But they helped us produce an ice projection because it was the Seattle Kraken's first season in the National Hockey League. And we were playing them on our opening night. And, you know, we did that giant Kraken bursting through the ice. And that was ridiculous, but it was awesome. And then we were able to reach out to them because they did like that whole perspective view. So like when you were up in the crowd, it looked like, you know, the Kraken was kind of jumping off of the ice. So we reached out to them to see if we could get like that template. And they were happy to supply that for us, which we were super thankful for. So that's something that we work off of, kind of like that perspective shift for like certain ice projections. But then other times we're just using like a flat top down view, like just depending on the view, like for certain sponsorship activations, you know, we're just projecting like a still image on there, but it, you know, it works great. And then for like the other more complicated stuff, like for opens or whatever, we're using like that perspective shift in like Cinema 4D to like get those 3D elements off of there into After Effects. And then it works out from there. So. Yeah, it's a big undertaking, a lot of rendering time, so much rendering time, but it ends up being worth it when you see the final product for sure. Oh, we also do a nightclub too, where we turn T-Mobile Arena into a rave for about 5 to 7 minutes. And we have like a lot of like a VJ like stuff that pops up on the ice to sync up with the music that's playing. So it's Vegas, you know, that's the best way I can describe it.
It's awesome. I can only imagine the render time. Do you guys use a render farm?
Yeah, well, we have a render farm like in our server room, but then we also have some pretty beefy machines that we use internally in our office as well. So yeah, we need all the firepower we can get.
Yeah, I was going to say that almost makes sense if you're doing that much stuff, especially in 3D, that there's something internally built that allows you to not rely on outside sources to be up and running. And so how much rendering do you do overnight?
Oh, all the time. Like
always something.
Oh yeah.
And you come in the next day, is it always done, or do you have some of those nightmare scenarios where you freak out and gotta restart?
Oh no, that's definitely happened on a handful of occasions. But I do think after so many mistakes, you know, you try to put in as many
fail safes. Like caution,
yeah, fail safes as possible to make sure that doesn't happen. For me, it's a lot of rendering matchups overnight. So I try to work ahead with rendering matchups out. I usually do it like in a month or two batch, depending on how many home games we have like during a month. So like for the like a month of November, December, I may start in like late October, just like getting all those rendered. And I'll leave those going up overnight. I usually take like, I've kind of like optimized like render scenes so they don't take too long, thankfully. But no, we've definitely had those nightmare scenarios where it's like, you know, it gets to frame 23 and an error pops up all of a sudden. and you don't figure it out until you come back to the office the next day and you're like, oh, that's great. I'm so glad that's happened to me right now.
I'm assuming you're rendering in EXR or something like that, so you can pick up from that point. But if you're only 23 frames in, that's probably not helpful anyway.
Yeah, it depends on the render. Like, I do a lot of just PNG sequences because I just like just running things straight out of Cinema 4D, and just I don't like working with EXRs. Like, they just feel super duper heavy. Like, they're useful, but I just prefer like a quick little PNG sequence, maybe some layer masks to change colors in certain instances if need be. But yeah, I try to keep things very simple. Like, I wouldn't describe myself as a very technically sound 3D artist, which may sound bad. I'm just like a very, I can be a brute forcer. Just like, okay, like if I can make this work this way, I'm going to make it work this way without being overcomplicated about it.
I don't know if I've met a motion designer that doesn't like to do some DIY. Like,
yeah,
sometimes you just have to jump in and figure it out, and right. Maybe then you learn something that you can apply to next time. But well, I guess what's a favorite story that you have of working with the Vegas Golden Knights at motion design related?
I think there's so many to go through. I think I want to say the season we won the Stanley Cup was our, obviously, you know, for the Stanley Cup reasons, but also we won the IDEA Award for best overall production the same season. So I think, you know, the combination of winning the cup and then winning the award that's voted on by our industry peers, I think, you know, it's like essentially won the Stanley Cup for sports production. So I think that would probably be like the most satisfying like conclusion. It's just like not just the team, not just the work we've done as like a motion design team, but just the work that we've done as a whole overall entertainment and production arm of a sports franchise, I think has been like the most defining moment and definitely like the happiest I've been. I'm a very like my individual accomplishments, you know, they're cool or whatever. Like, that's great. But the fact that we've been able to, as a team, put on such a consistently ridiculous and awesome and over the top show for so many years and then finally win an award, you know, voted on by people whose opinion, you know, means it's an elevated opinion, you know, because these are all people who do what you do. I think that moment was like, oh wow, like, you know, that's something that has meant a lot to me, that people recognize our efforts as a whole collective.
So you have the, and I want to make sure that I'm like saying this correctly, you have the privilege in a sense of working in a sport that has traditionally just, you know, it's an interesting sport. Like, I grew up watching hockey, right? And was, right. Used to be a huge fan. But you don't see a whole lot of like diverse faces or things within hockey. And for you to be able to work right. in hockey, and then now working for arguably the most exciting brand within hockey, which is totally different from what the traditional hockey mold is. What is that like right. working for the Vegas Aces? The Vegas Knights.
No, it's definitely an interesting experience, especially when I first started. Like you said, not traditionally, you know, featuring people of color in the space. So like when I walked in, well, let me step back a couple, because I'm coming from school, grew up in Vegas, went to school in Utah. So going to Utah itself was a culture shock for me. So then coming back, working for the Vegas Golden Knights, it wasn't that much of like a culture shock, but just being in a office space and, you know, trying to navigate the politics within that was interesting for sure. But like you said, it is a privilege at the end of the day. Like despite it all, like I get to make graphics for like an ice hockey team. That's something that I never would have told myself when I was in high school. So always thankful for the opportunity and, you know, trying to navigate this space the best that I can. Like, how do I put this? You know, as somebody who's a racial minority also in the space, you know, you can only do so much to try to relate, I guess, in the space. But at the end of the day, I'm not there to fit in, you know, like I'm there to just be myself and whatever comes with that, but I'm not working in this space to like try to, you know, compromise who I am or to feel like I have to shrink myself. So regardless of the differences that I may find myself in, you know, as a person of color in the space, I'm never going to let that deter me from, you know, using my voice in ways that I can, or, you know, let it affect my creativity or anything like that. So, you know, a privilege to work in this space, but I'm not going to shrink myself down to, you know, conform or anything like that. Like I want to be myself out loud, proud as I can be, no matter what.
I'm going to take a step back because you mentioned something about growing up in Vegas, going to school in Utah. When you were growing up, there were zero professional sports teams there. And now you have, you know, three on the way to being four, possibly going to be five in some coming years.
Yeah.
What does that feel like now knowing that Vegas, you know, that everybody that has been known for ages as something totally different is now turning into not only a sports city, but a really good sport team city?
I'm not looking forward to all the traffic.
No
worries. I'll be coming in from, yeah, Californians and people from all over the place. But no, it definitely is super interesting watching, you know, things change and transform. I remember, like, you know, a lot of the initial concerns before sports teams got here was, you know, gambling and betting and all that kind of stuff. And then it's ironic how so many sports leagues have betting sponsors. So I think it's interesting how that kind of all transformed to the current landscape. But no, it's definitely great being a part of the city and seeing how things, you know, are going, continuing to be on the up. Like you said, we were pretty fortunate to have a really good hockey team right off the bat, and then getting an expansion franchise with the Aces, or sorry, not an expansion franchise, a relocated franchise with the Aces, and then drafting well, and now they're back-to-back champions. Raiders are a popular sports brand, so they have that going for them, which is good. And then, you know, possibly having the A's come here, and then, you know, all the talks around the NBA. It really is incredible to see it change in real time. And, you know, I'm happy for, especially like people that work here in the industry, like, you know, the day-to-day freelance people that I, you know, I work with up in the control room, you know, they're going to have more opportunities, you know, feed their families, to feed themselves and all that kind of stuff. So it's definitely exciting. And, you know, I think more sports creatives in the city is always good because, you know, we only really get a chance to connect like over LinkedIn or at the Idea Conference. Or anything like that. So just being able to like have people that you can reach out to, I think locally, will be a net positive for everybody else in the city that is working here in Vegas.
So let's talk about some of the work. So you get to Vegas, and you know, obviously, like you said, it's exciting right out the bat. I mean, I'm a little biased on the colors because I love the combination of black and gold. Anytime you can put those together, I love it. Mm. But talk about some of the projects that you have been able to work on over the years with the Knights to be able to, you know, and a lot of it that has not only been seen there in Vegas, but has been recognized by, you know, your peers and fans around the globe.
Yeah, there's honestly so many projects to even kind of reference, but you know, the handful that come to mind are ones that, you know, like the Miracle team, like when they came here to Vegas and we honored them, like creating a whole graphics package surrounding them and honoring them, I think was super cool. Something like the Black History matchup stuff that I've made, I think has been awesome, but obviously I'm biased and not front. Done some wonderful Pride stuff too, and then just the general, like the show that we put on as a whole, you know, from ice projection to, you know, the Golden Knights skating out on the ice and battling. And now that we have a dragon at the castle, incorporating that into the show. And then I think going back to last season too, making a unique playoff matchup for every single round, for every team that we played against all the way up to the final, creating different environments, like in Florida, like when we were playing against Florida, we were like in like a humid, dense tree kind of landscape. And then we were playing against the Stars. We had like an astro background with like a a Northern Lights kind of feel to it too. So, and then for Winnipeg, cutting a jet in half on the ice was ridiculous, but also awesome, you know? So I think the fact that we kind of just treat it like a Vegas show on the strip, that's always kind of like a philosophy that we've had. Like, we're not just competing against other NHL teams, but, you know, we're putting on a show. We want people to come see our show. And there's a plethora of amazing shows on the Las Vegas Strip. So how do we compete on a night-to-night, daily basis with those shows as well? So I it's hard for me to choose just like one project. It's like they're all pretty special to me. I think the most significantly special one for me is like my first graphic ever being played at T-Mobile Arena, which was like a Make Noise graphic, and then recording that for the first time and hearing the crowd react to that. I was like, oh, like, this is what I'm in for. I can already feel like my love and passion for it growing, like knowing that, you know, being a part of this show and seeing the crowd react, you know, seeing, you know, kids dancing with their parents or seeing somebody chug a beer or, you know, incorporating all these kind of things into the show and seeing just reaction and the pop that you get with certain things, I think is kind of like the thing that matters the most to me. And like with every project, I kind of keep that in mind, like what's going to get the crowd to jump or to react.
When building out your show like that, how far ahead are you able to get? Because it, especially when you work in 3D, the ice projection, I'm sure takes time too. How far ahead are you guys running, and how quickly do some of your projects have to get turned?
Yeah, so it definitely varies. When it comes to like our regular season open, or at least our first one, we definitely have like a few months to, in advance to plan it out. Because usually we do like an opening night specific like open celebration, and then we have like a regular season one. And then after the All-Star break, we have another open for the season. So we try to like plan as much as we can months in advance. But then when it comes to playoffs, we don't have that luxury because, you know, sometimes it'll be coming down to the wire at the end of the season where we won't know who we're playing until like game 82. And so we try to like definitely plan as much as we can in advance, or we plan something that's a bit more general so we can just like apply it to either team. And then we kind of like work on specifics thereafter, depending on who we're going to play in the next round. But it really varies from like months to weeks to even days. Like there have been times we've been working on assets, I want to say like at least an hour or two before puck drop has happened. So turnaround times can vary, but you know, we try to make things as easy as possible as we can on ourselves, but there are just unpredictable things that come up in production, as I'm sure everybody knows, you know.
And you mentioned a few different aspects of what you do and working on things till really the puck is about to drop. And you had mentioned earlier about being up in the control room and working with freelancers. What does your schedule look like, and how involved are you in the game day? You know, we're like running a graphics machine versus building everything up front. What does that look like for you?
Yeah, it honestly depends on the day. Like if we don't have a game, then it's just kind of like a regular 9-to-5 kind of thing. And then on some days where we do have games, like either I'll like work from home or I'll like go to the office, you know, at 9, work on like an ice projection or whatever. Try to get down to the arena at about 3:30. And then we have, you know, a rehearsal window in there just to like make sure everything's working properly in the building. Then we'll have like a production meeting downstairs going through the script. Then we have a meeting upstairs, going through the script with all the like actual people in the control room. Occasionally I've had to run like a Daktronics or something like that, but usually I'm kind of just up there supervising, like, you know, just any small bits of like graphics here and there, whether it's like an LED that needs to be revised or, you know, just seeing how a crowd reacts to a certain graphic that's played in the bowl. So I wouldn't say I do like a lot in the control room outside of just kind of like watching the game and just watching the crowd. But I would say like a longest day could go from like a 9 in the morning to like 10:30 at night when we get out of the building. So like a 12-13 hour day just for a game day. It can be a lot, as I'm sure other people who work in sports know, but I can think of a lot worse situations to be in also. as opposed to getting paid to make graphics and watch a hockey game, essentially.
And on that note, when you prepare for an upcoming season, what does your content planning schedule look like? And do you build off of what was previously created, or do you kind of start over from
scratch? So it honestly depends, because from season to season, sometimes like our tagline will change, or like the aesthetic changes from the marketing side of things. And, you know, we try to marry some elements of the end game to the marketing feel. So we usually have to kind of like, we usually build out assets on our own, just kind of ideate and, you know, kind of put ideas out there and throw things at the wall and see what sticks. And then, you know, we come together with our marketing team to see what kind of crossovers and blends there are and what kind of elements we can take from there in to or incorporate into our graphics and aesthetic for the live show. So we usually start that around, I want to say like late July, early August, just trying to come together and make sure things are in harmony. And for certain things, we definitely do just like bring it over from next season, especially if it's something that was like super intensive. There's no reason to rebuild the wheel every time, especially with something that is proven that works with the crowd. You know, we have this kind of interactive thing called Neon, where it's just like a simple crowd participation video that we run pretty much every game. And it's been essentially the same since year one, I believe, before I joined, but the same since year one. And it works every time. So it's like, well, if it works and it keeps working, there's no reason to just try to reinvent it just for the sake of reinventing it. You know, we don't want to overcomplicate the show, even though our show is pretty complicated as is. But when we know something's like a surefire guarantee crowd pleaser, we're going to keep it running until it doesn't make sense anymore.
Nice. And you mentioned earlier that kind of what I would describe as a dopamine hit when you see fans react, or, you know, that fan chugging a beer or the kid dancing. Is there anything outside of work that like compares to that feeling? Because I think that's something that really resonates with a lot of people in sports, knowing that, you know, the work that they're doing is like really like affecting people to like either take an action or react or some kind of way. Do you get that anywhere else?
It's definitely a unique feeling of sports and working in sports. I will say that there are a couple of hobbies of mine where I get like a similar feeling. Like I've started bowling about a year or two ago. So like when I get a good roll, like I have like a decent like 140, 150 average, you know, I'm not like on the tour or anything. But when I
That's better than me. Yeah, I was going to say, like, what are we talking about? That's a great score to me.
But when I get like a good couple roles, like consistency in a row, like, and I feel like myself kind of like learning, like, oh, like my technical abilities, like kind of getting more refined, like that's a really good feeling. I also try to like produce music here and there. So like whenever I put together like a song that I can replay over and over again that, you know, sounds good to my ears, I'm like, okay, like that's a really good feeling that I was able to put together something that I actually like. Because as artists, I feel like we're always our own biggest critiques, and we can start something and be like, okay, I hate this after just like 30 minutes or an hour working on it. So like being able to work through that initial feeling, that initial rough draft, and like get something down that I feel happy about, I think kind of gives you that similar feeling outside of working in sports.
That's awesome. I love the music angle too. I'm curious if you use music when you're creating graphics, or if that rhythm has influenced how you create your graphics.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely a big music person. Like if you look at my Spotify Unwrapped or whatever, it's just like thousands and thousands of hours of just listening to music. And like depending on what mood I'm in, like I'll use certain different playlists to kind of get my gears going. I have all my Spotify playlists color-coded based on their mood. It's such a Virgo thing, if anybody's into astrology, I guess. But they're all color-coded. So like my blue playlist is like kind of like melancholy, sad music. My yellow playlist is a more happy dance music. And then my orange playlist is also happy, but more like R&B happy, you know? So depending on like the mood that I'm in, I kind of just go and pick a playlist and kind of go through, and it helps me a lot when creating. So I guess music does have a big effect on what I'm creating in a moment.
Who's at the top of your list? What artist?
Oh,
if
okay.
You, if
so
you
right
care
now
to share.
Yeah, no, for sure. I like a lot of Vince Staples. I think his last three albums have been phenomenal. Big on Dominic Fike, somebody that I really enjoy a lot. The Marias, really good. Omar Apollo. I've recently been listening to some like UK garage / house music. So this guy named Sammy Virgie has popped up a lot, and another artist by the name of MPH, like Miles Per Hour. So it's kind of like a blend. It's a lot of R&B, a lot of house music for me. I feel like those two are kind of like, there's like so many different offshoots of those genres, I think, or like EDM in general, that you can kind of find something that you like depending on the day that just fits your mood perfectly. So that's kind of what I've been listening to and locked in on lately.
That's awesome. That's the one thing, as spending a lot of time video editing, I was always jealous of the motion graphics team because I'm like, you get to listen to music all day. Like, I wanted to listen to music, but in my head, I'm like playing the same songs over and over and over. I'm curious, you know, because I come more from the traditional video editing side, but for those who might want to like level up their motion graphics, what advice do you have? Like, what are some tips and tricks or just general practices to kind of up level their motion graphics game?
Yeah. So for me, I'm a big like reverse engineering kind of person. So I'll go on Behance and just like look at a whole bunch of different graphics packages that I like and like just kind of wonder to myself, like, oh, I wonder how they made that. Or I wonder, you know, what techniques they're using behind the scenes underneath the hood to produce what they're producing. So I'll like, you know, closely examine graphics and go to Cinema 4D, just try to like recreate things as much as I can. And then whatever I learn through like recreating a certain look, then I can like take and use those same techniques or a similar technique and use it for stuff with the Golden Knights or in like freelance stuff. So like a lot of the people that I pay attention to now are like Elite Edge, Too Fresh, Creative, do phenomenal work. They're probably like industry standard. And then also like a lot of just like studios that produce, you know, credit sequences, like Elastic, I believe, is one of them. I'm just like a big person who just like likes to study and like just study others and try to like pick things off from there and then apply it to my own art the best that I can.
So you've been able to, you know, you talked about this a little bit earlier. You've been able to pull off some things that, you know, some people in other organizations or teams may struggle with. You talked about, you know, being able to do things during Black History Month, during Pride Month. Talk about the buy-in from, you know, leadership, whether that's your supervisor or people all the way at the top, to be able to do those things. And is there like an internal battle, or is there like, what's that internal conversation to bring these things to fruition?
Yeah, so I'm thankful that I've pretty much for the majority of my career of sports so far, I've had bosses that have advocated for me. Even like up to like our president, Kerry Buchholz, like he wants to see people like take initiative on things. I think that's the biggest thing. Like, I don't really experience a lot of pushback when it comes to producing graphics for these certain occasions and moments, because I think the want is there from the higher ups. Like, and also like there is like compromise here and there, but it's never anything that's too drastic that'll, you know, take me out of what I'm working on. So I do think the fact that the environment that I work in has been so open to what I've made so far has made me, you know, continue wanting to produce on that sense. So I think it just kind of does start from the top. Like, I think we have a good philosophy internally with the Golden Knights that allows people to feel comfortable with self-expression and things of that nature. So I never really feel like afraid or scared when it comes to producing certain things. And I think one thing that kind of pushes me to do it also is that, you know, considering the position that I'm in, like, nobody else is going to do it but me. So I might as well do it, you know, take initiative, do it, and, you know, we'll see what happens.
And with that said, like I mentioned, some people, you know, have that pushback or blowback from different, you know, higher ups or fan bases. What would be your advice to someone who's looking to, you know, get some of that stuff done in their organization, whether it's a, you know, this community is filled with people from high school, college, professional level who may want to, you know, produce content for Heritage Months or different celebrations, or just to not only just be recognized, but also to grow the fan base. Because I'll also think that when you do things like, you know, do things showcasing and celebrating different months, that also grows your fan base. You're bringing new eyeballs to your sport, whether that's hockey or basketball or any of those things. What are your thoughts on those?
I think the biggest thing is like take an initiative like yourself, instead of waiting for somebody to come to you, be like, hey, do you want to make this? Or, hey, do you want to make this? Be like, okay, like this is what I'm producing. This is what I want to incorporate into the show. This is what I want to see posted on socials. Like kind of come with them with like almost like a content plan, and like have like a why, like this is like important to you. Why would it be important to others as well? You know, I think getting the buy-in starts with, you know, kind of like telling that story and trying to let people know that telling these stories is in fact important. I do think there are a lot of people out there, you know, whether it be people, you know, people of color, people of different sexualities, people of different, you know, origins and all that kind of stuff. There are a lot of people kind of living in like a certain silence because they don't know that there are people out there like them or people out there that support them. And I do think, you know, people always say, you know, the whole rainbow profile picture on social media is like a useless gesture. And that's not something that I really agree with. I do think showing any kind of, you know, support or unity and all that kind of stuff can make somebody feel really welcome. And I do think taking that step in general just like starts from the people within. And I think you have to care in order to get other people to care. And if you kind of just like put in half effort to showcase why something is important, then I don't think it's going to stick. So for me personally, you know, when it comes to like creating like a Black History Month matchup, it's not something that I like asked for permission to do. It was something that I produced and I was like, you know, this is something that's really important to me. This is something that I put a lot of work into. And, you know, we're already here right now. We have this done. So I think it just makes sense considering the importance of this month, considering this is something that you don't really see, especially at an ice hockey game. I think this is something that's important to showcase because, you know, there's probably somebody out there in the crowd and the 18,000 people that we have that can look at that and be like, wow, I never thought, you know, I would see this collection of people on a graphic for the Vegas Golden Knights, you know? Or, you know, even just like a simple like social content plan or social post, be like, hey, like I never thought me as a person who's a part of the LGBTQ plus community would see, you know, a team show that solidarity with me. So I do think it's just so important that if you're a person internally in an organization that, you know, you approach your leaders with a real plan and a why as to why something is important to you and why it should be important to, and why it should be important for your organization to champion as a whole.
Especially with some of, like we said, we're in Pride Month. We, you know, we do shows for Black History Month. You've done a great job emphasizing those during those months, but especially when it comes to Black History Month, and this is something that came across my radar in like 2020 when everything was about, you know, learning and, you know, history and all of that. But when you go back and you actually look at the beginning history of, you know, hockey, I think that's a forgotten or a, you know, glossed over piece of how hockey was actually started, where it started, by who it was started, and then being able to bring that to the forefront, you know, during Black History Month. Like you say, you live on, you know, multiple sides of this. When you see your work showcased that is not only celebrating the now, but the where it started, how it started, all that, how does that make you feel individually? And then what are the people around you? What are the conversations that kind of happen like when you see your work showcased?
Yeah, for sure. So Definitely shout out to the Color Talkie League that started in, I believe, Nova Scotia, Canada. That's something that I took like a lot of inspiration from when it came to producing like some of the jersey, like the special theme night jerseys that I was able to produce for the Golden Knights. But yeah, just that feeling of, you know, representation, I think is something that's like unmatched, especially in a space that's not common for, you know, for Black people to be represented in. And even like you mentioned, forgotten about, essentially. I definitely feel like part of it is like a duty of mine to, you know, inject my own personal experience and perspective into the sport whenever I can. And I think it would be like irresponsible for me to not do that. So when it comes to like having these moments to showcase, whether it be making a jersey or making a graphic, like I definitely feel like a great sense of pride doing these things. But at the same time, it's like, well, yeah, this is kind of like what I should do as like a Black man in this space, you know, knowing, having that awareness that, you know, this is something that's uncommon. So I might as well, in these instances, I might as well try my best, you know, showcase my own perspective and how it relates to hockey as a whole. And even just, not even just hockey, but just like, you know, society, you know, just the amount of progress that has been made due to, you know, the civil rights movement, all that kind of stuff. And why we even have certain things in place to this day are because of people from the past, or for specifically Black people from the past who've fought for these things for Black people, yes, but how it's positively affected society as a whole. So there's definitely a great sense of pride when it comes to producing these kind of things. And it's not something that I shy away from. It's something that I will continue to do and be proud of moving forward.
Was there a time when you felt that you were comfortable enough, or is it because of who you are around and the people that you work with that you feel comfortable showing up to work as yourself to be able to produce this content and showcase all of it to the broader audience that you have, whether that's on social, whether that's in arena, etc.
Yeah, so I would say that the people I'm around made me feel comfortable, like to even, you know, consider breaching that in the first place. Because like when I first came in as an intern, you know, unfamiliar environment, I don't really know everybody in the office. I don't really know what everybody's like, you know, what kind of biases or prejudices people may have, you know, especially in this space of hockey. But as I got to know like my coworkers more and more, especially like the team that I work with directly, our entertainment and production team, I realized that, you know, they're an open-minded group, and they, you know, embraced me as one of their own coming in my early years. So from there, I was able to feel more comfortable expressing myself and letting them know like these are the things that are important to me. And when it comes to incorporating these things in the show, I would appreciate it if we can do these things. And, you know, there is never any pushback from them about that, because, you know, I came in with that why, and just the mutual respect and camaraderie we have, you know, they knew that these things are something that are important to me. So they had no problem, you know, finding ways to get it integrated where applicable.
All right, let's get into some fun real quick. Okay. Because, you know, sometimes these topics, they're important always, right? But sometimes things get a little heavy, you know, and then it pushes us into a point where, oh, if it's too heavy, then we got to walk away, right? All right, so we're going to have fun.
All right.
Let your shoulders back. You have a admiration and love for a lot of different things, right? Music, culture, all of those things. Vegas gives you 1,000% of all that. So we're going to give you 30 seconds to play a little quick game. On what are your top things to do or must things to do? I don't even know if that sounded right, but what are things that you must do when visiting Las Vegas? And I'm going to start the clock over here and give you a few extra seconds to think about that. Yeah. But
just to preface, I'm a big introvert, so
hey, what are things that, like that, you know, that you may want to do? All right, so okay, sure. Ready, set, go.
Okay, first and foremost, food. Vegas probably has one of the most diverse plethoras of food ever in the United States because there's so it's a melting pot. So there's so many different cultures that come here, whether it be, you know, Korean food, Indian food, Greek food, pretty much everything that you can think of, you can find here. If you are not a fan of super duper big crowds, but you still want a Vegas experience, I would consider going down to the Arts District in downtown Las Vegas. It's such a cool place. There are a lot of, you know, bars you can go to. That's where, you know, a lot of like more artsy stuff is for sure.
We have two.
Oh, wow.
But within those two, that is, you know, those are two things that there's a lot of it there. And so you're kind of cheating because there's like a billion different, I mean, especially when it comes to food, like there is no shortage of different types of food. The music there, the shows there, you know, now you have all of the entertainment from a sports perspectives, and you know, like you said, art. You know, Vegas has been known for, you know, the gambling and the betting for so long, but now it's turning into you don't even have to be into that. It's, you know, it's more family friendly than people probably would think. You know, I enjoy my time when I visit Vegas. So, speaking of food, what is your go-to? I mean, obviously you grew up there, but like what's a go-to spot for you when it comes to food?
There's this place I've been going to a lot recently called a Volcano Grill, which is kind of like a, Hawaiian barbecue-ish spot. I love getting like a spicy chicken katsu from there with a filet mignon steak bites and a couple of rice scoops. And then they have like some good like yum yum sauce and like spicy teriyaki sauce that I love just dipping everything into. So I love that. And then Korean barbecue is also one I love a lot as well.
Sounds like a Gordon Ramsay restaurant. There's more word than that I didn't quite fully understand. I guess I want to ask about the introverted part that you just mentioned, you know, talking about, I consider myself an introvert too. Talking and representing yourself, sometimes it's easier just to not say anything and know that what you think is what matters. If somebody said something, you just kind of ignore it and walk away and it doesn't really affect you. just like, okay, well, it's not worth getting into this long argument or conversation about it. So how do you show up, or is there something that you do to center yourself so that you feel like you can speak out on things that you care about?
I think the biggest thing for me, one, shout out to my therapist who taught me how to be mindful and present and in the moment, which has helped a lot, you know, just in general, as a general life advice. But I think also realizing, especially as I like approach my early 20s, I'm 27 now, is coming to the realization that anybody who, you know, promotes any kind of bigotry or bias or prejudice, like that kind of thinking is illogical. Like, you know, we're all essentially human beings and, you know, we have our differences. That's, you know, whatever. But the fact that there are people out there who will hate other people, you know, because of the color of their skin or because their sexual orientation, like things that don't really matter in the grand scheme of things. Just understanding how literally dumb that is, and like understanding that people who have these kind of feelings will be like on the wrong side of history and not looked favorably upon, kind of gives me that confidence to be like, okay, like I'm not going to convince you or justify my existence to you. Like I'm going to exist no matter what. I'm going to spread positivity no matter what. I'm going to spread love no matter what. And, you know, if you want to be, you know, racist, if you want to be homophobic, you know, do that over there. But none of that affects me, and that doesn't affect me mentally, because I realize like how ridiculous you look by hating on another human being the way that you do. So, I think that's just like the biggest thing, is just realizing that, you know, like other people's or hatred people's, you know, ideology and way of thinking just doesn't make sense. So there's no reason to give into that at all.
Do you think any of your introverted nature has helped you with your art or creating content? Like you put on the blinders and you just have an idea and you try and flesh it out and figure it out?
I think my introvertedness helped. I think it helped me lock in, like in college when I kind of really started like learning why I did what I did. Cause obviously I designed before I got to college and majored in it. But like, since I didn't go out a lot, I was kind of just forced to like sit in my dorm room and just work on my craft. And I think, you know, college is where I really like refine kind of like my process. And obviously taking the step into like professional sports is also another leap. But my introverted ways, I think, kind of help solidify and establish my work ethic because I didn't want to go out. So I was like, okay, I'll just do something productive instead. So on a day-to-day, I wouldn't say like it helps me in any particular way. But I do think when it came to like developing those initial skills and my skill set that I currently have today, like just not wanting to go out and just doing work instead, I think has like it prepared me well from work to where I'm at now.
Your advice to individuals who are, you know, who look like you, have similar backgrounds, who may be looking to get started in this industry or are currently in the industry and not knowing how to properly utilize their voice to advocate for things that are good for the industry and their also interests?
I would say, like, this is going to sound like like very vague advice, and it may not like make sense to a lot of people, but I think one of the best pieces of advice I've ever gotten was, it's just two words, it's do something. Like, especially as like creatives in this industry, I feel like we can kind of get bombarded with the feeling of there being so many options or so many ways to do something, or, you know, the blank canvas, you know, that's something that we all fear. It's just like, okay, like I have so many possibilities and ways that I can do a certain thing. And we get so paralyzed by that we don't really do anything at all. So for me, I think it's just doing something, whether it be having just like an initial conversation with another coworker that could, you know, inspire you to want to take another step. Or even if you want to just go all out straight off the bat and just like go to your team's president, or if you have access to that, you know, or if it's just starting with creating a graphic for like social media, like any like little thing, like any like first little step, I think is important. I think people always say that it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. So I think just to even if you have those feelings that you want to, you know, use your voice and all that, I think it just starts with starting small. Like I said, like I think a conversation with a coworker can be like a big step because you're getting those feelings out at least. And then from there, you can be more comfortable in that way. Yeah, I think that's just like the biggest thing for me. It's just that you can't be inactive. Like, I'm not saying you have to be like a revolutionary, like you don't have to be a Black Panther. But if you want to, you know, see a difference, you kind of have to start somewhere, no matter how big or how small it is, you know. And if you feel like you're in an environment where you can't healthily express that without any kind of backlash or pushback from like an higher up, I would consider, you know, reaching out to people on other teams, at least at the minimum. That way, if you don't feel welcome in your environment, you can still reach out and know that there are other people who work in the same industry as you, you know, may have similar feelings to you. I do think, you know, there are opportunities across the board that you can just like reach out to somebody and, you know, have your voice heard in some way, no matter how big or how small. I think, you know, the biggest thing, like I said, is just do something, start somewhere, and you never know where things can end up, because when you speak out, somebody else may feel similar to you, but may have been scared to express it themselves. And, you know, one person does it, another person does it, and it doubles from there. You know, then you got 4 people, then you got 8 people, then you got 16 people, all because you just started a conversation. So I think that's the biggest thing, just starting somewhere and doing something.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free. Remember, The world needs your voice, so keep creating.